The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Without dependence on God, Dr. King said, our efforts turn to ashes and our sunrises into darkest night, unless His Spirit pervades our lives.
There isn't any high ground to atheism. Atheism is simply irrational.
The conscience of the Christian and the heart of the Christian by faith finds in the gospel, and only in the gospel, a good and a clean conscience.
The Lord's Supper is not incidental or an add-on to the life of the church. Where Jesus is, there is the church. And here, that presence is defined by the bread of the Eucharist.
Duluth, Minnesota letter carriers, love, issues, etc.
I don't know what the word is supposed to mean. Sometimes when the press uses the word Catholic, what they mean by that word. I think what they often mean is kind of a multi-generational ethnicity. It's not an ethnicity. It's a cultural thing. It's a heritage thing. It's Catholic because my grandfather was a Catholic immigrant, and maybe because I have been baptized or married or occasionally visit a Catholic church. Maybe that's what it means. But the Washington Post is absolutely shocked that Catholic Sunday school teachers are being asked by a Catholic diocese to be Catholic. We're going to talk about that and other stories in the media, religious stories in the media, with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Thanks for tuning us in. Molly will be our guest first. Then we'll be talking with Mike Hoy of Missouri Catholic Conference about Missouri Governor Jay Nixon's veto of a conscience exception bill that has to do with contraception and abortion. And then we'll remember Ruth on this Monday afternoon, July the 6th. Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University Chicago will be our guest. You can join us as well for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to getreligion.org. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's nice to be here.
You write about a recent Washington Post story talking about Catholic belief, or perhaps lack thereof. What working definition does the Post reporter appear to be using for the term Catholic?
Yeah, well, just by way of background, this story is about how a local diocese is asking its Sunday school teachers to affirm their Catholic beliefs before they teach their classes. Now, that is so unsurprising to someone like me, because in my church, I'm Lutheran, we would never have someone teaching Sunday school who didn't affirm Lutheran theology. But apparently this is very, very shocking for the Washington Post. I mean, they have been utterly scandalized. They're pushing this story. And the definition is pretty easy to see from the lead of the story. The whole hook for the story is that a woman who disagrees with her church on the office of the ministry, the teachings of her church on the sanctity of human life, she disagrees with her church on the authority of the magisterium, which is one of the, you know, authorities in the Catholic Church, is identified as someone who's, you know, just a very good Catholic, almost like a better Catholic than the people who are asking her to affirm her Catholicism. So it would seem that the definition is just completely subjective. If you feel like you are a good member of your faith, and that's what's most important, not some sort of objective outside standard by which we can judge whether you are, in fact, adhering to the particular tenets of your faith or not.
What in particular in the story did you find interesting as a journalist?
Well, a few things. The number one most interesting thing, I thought, was that the whole story is about this evil, horrible profession of faith that people are asked to sign. But the story doesn't actually tell you what the words of that profession of faith are. In fact, it gives like a total of 4 words. Believe everything is put in quotes, and of will and intellect is put in quotes, but nothing else is put in quotes. So it's all summarized by the reporter, which, you know, given the sort of slant of the story, it seems kind of unfortunate that that would be that you wouldn't quote huge chunks of it or explain in much greater detail. I ended up having to, you know, find the oath, and it's pretty standard. I mean, it's a recitation of the Apostles' Creed and then some other additional, you know, Roman Catholic stuff about assenting to the magisterium. I mean, nothing surprising at all. Like, no one probably would really be that surprised that if you were going to have an affirmation of Catholic faith, that it would have basic Catholic teachings. So that was definitely the most surprising thing I thought. And it also weakened the story tremendously because it just opens the reporter up to charges that she's being unfair. But I do have to mention that my other favorite thing was that the story went almost full Godwin. There's that internet rule that whoever invokes Hitler first loses the debate or something. You know, I can't remember exactly how it's put. But the end of the story, the oath is compared to Nazi Germany.
You're kidding.
I thought it was really, you know, maybe too subtle, but I thought it was hilarious. But
now, it also uses a phrase that you kind of single out here, and that is the phrase "small but growing number." How is that often used in reporting, and how about in this story in the Washington Post?
Yeah, so the reporter said something like, "This oath is part of a small but growing." That this diocese is part of a small but growing number of dioceses that are asking for these oaths. But it's just a near meaningless phrase. It's kind of a weasel word, they would put it, that is how you would characterize it. It doesn't really tell us anything. What is a small number? How much is it growing? I mean, it should be pretty easy to characterize precisely how many people are doing these oaths. And in fact, the story does tell us that it comes straight from the Vatican, a desire to, they apparently thought, who would have thought this possible, but they thought the last few decades had a watering down of teaching and some confusion about what the Catholic Church actually teaches. And so the Vatican itself asked people to kind of make sure that people in teaching positions believe what the Church actually teaches. But I don't know. It's a meaningless phrase. I have no idea what it means.
Did the piece also overplay the outrage of the subject and of the apparent number that she has with her?
I love this. This is another favorite part. This, apparently, we're told at least four people have been upset by this oath at this one church, which I happen to know the church in question because one of my best friends goes there. She lives within walking distance of this church, and it's a pretty liberal church with a very loosey-goosey liturgy and whatnot. It's not high church, we could say. And but at least 4 women there, or at least 4 teachers there, were upset, and so they got a really big Washington Post story out of it. And what I think is funny is, like, a week ago or so, there were 5,000 people at the National Cathedral to hear a homily on religious liberty and the importance of liberty and the lives of Catholics, and I don't think it got any, if at all, I didn't get much, if any, coverage at the same paper.
So explain that to me before we move on to this next story having to do with that. Why is it that a arguably newsworthy story doesn't get much coverage, and then 4 people disgruntled over a fidelity oath for Sunday school teachers does?
I wish I could explain that. I feel like I'm needing to figure this out more. I didn't go to journalism school, so I don't quite understand how it's possible that 4 people would be more newsworthy than 5,000, and who are clearly part of a growing number of people who are concerned about something. But I think it just fits some templates that reporters enjoy. We always like those stories about how the little guy is taking on the big guy, and we tend to think of authoritarian institutions as bad, unless they're the government, in which case the reporters love that institution typically and would love to see it expand. So it just kind of fits into some ruts that we get into and in how we cover stories. We like the outsider against the power structure. Although, again, what are these 5,000 Catholics in the cathedral doing other than fighting the man in the form of the HHS mandate? And yet that doesn't fit into that template for some reason. I don't know.
What is this organization called Faith in Public Life?
Yeah, so Faith in Public Life is a really interesting organization. They exist to run PR campaigns, and they do a fantastic job with them. They are funded by George Soros, who's a very prominent atheist who figured out that it would be good to work with religious believers on some of his progressive and liberal ideas. And so he has put a lot of money toward some different groups that are Christian or otherwise, like liberal Christian or progressive believers of a different stripe. And they run PR campaigns, and they do a very good job. They're very slick. I mean, it looks like Madison Avenue type stuff. They're very effective. They're very professional. They provide reporters with storylines, framing, questions to ask, you know, backgrounders for those questions, sources for who they should talk to. I mean, they give you all the work, and it's hard when you're being a reporter and you have to file 3 stories a day and you don't have the time to do the research. I mean, these people just provide it for you, and it can help you just set up a story and run with it. And some reporters have done that.
Okay, so what have you noticed about the way that Soros is, the Soros-funded Faith in Public Life is being treated in the media?
Well, people tend to adopt their framing, their narrative structure. So one of the PR campaigns that they're running, and they've been running it since January or so, is that Roman Catholic bishops who care about religious liberty issues are nothing more than partisan hacks. And they are making things it's a very dangerous mixture of politics and religion, and it's hurting the Catholic Church, and they're just being, you know, Republican operatives by caring about religious liberty. And the reason why they say that is because President Obama's HHS administration is the one, is the one coming out with this mandate that restricts religious liberty for certain religious institutions. So because they're fighting the mandate, then of course they're being partisan is the way this PR campaign goes. And in fact, we've seen stories like this repeated everywhere, from the Los Angeles Times to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch to the New York Times to the Washington Post. That kind of theme has infiltrated the whole debate.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, I guess the bottom line here is the Washington Post, and maybe the media in general, as the Washington Post represents it, is the Washington Post being fair with allegedly political religious movements? Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. It's Monday afternoon, July the 16th. When we come back, a few more minutes with her, and we'll be talking with Mike Hoy of Missouri Catholic Conference about Missouri Governor Jay Nixon's veto of a conscience exception bill.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
We have a special premium for first-time donors to Issues Etc. It's the new Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mousepad. We'll send it to you for your first-time donation to Issues Etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make your first-time gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Thanks for your support.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Think big screens belong in the movie theater, not at church? Think garage bands should stay in the garage, not be jamming in front of the altar? Hey, we do too. Come join us at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, for services that are reverent and relevant, vibrant and traditional. Divine service on Saturday at 6 p.m., on Sunday morning at 7:45 and 10, with Sunday school and Bible class in between at 9. Join us. Not a big screen or garage band in sight. Promise.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Ziegler, Hemingway of GetReligion.org, is our guest. Talking about the Washington Post stories about, well, it's hard to tell what they're doing with these allegedly political religious movements. I guess the bottom line, Molly, is the Washington Post being fair in its coverage and its treatment of these allegedly political religious movements?
Well, this is what I find amazing about it. Another PR campaign being run by the very same Soros-funded firm is a nakedly political campaign called Nuns on the Bus, which is, once again, four women. Four seems to be the magic number for getting into the Post. Four ladies on a bus, four sisters, I think they're on a bus, who are protesting the Paul Ryan GOP budget. And the same group is running both campaigns. The one that says it's too partisan to care about religious liberty is the same group running the anti-GOP budget campaign. And I know that I shouldn't expect anything of PR firms, but I was shocked to learn this, and more shocked that sometimes reporters bought both PR spins. I mean, the same reporter actually wrote a bishops being too political story and a look at these awesome nuns on the bus who are fighting the GOP story. And I just find that interesting.
The same reporter.
It was.
Is this, in your opinion, an example of journalistic laziness, just simply taking what the PR firm provides you as a journalist? And as you say, there are deadlines, there are time constraints, there's a lot of work to be done, there are fewer people doing it, or is it just a huge blind spot?
I imagine it's just a blind spot. I think that perhaps even the reporter didn't realize, where her biases came into play, or I don't know. I found it hard to believe. In fact, I didn't believe at first that the same PR people were running both campaigns until readers at Get Religion actually proved it to me. And I can't really understand why a reporter would write up both campaigns without even mentioning, by the way, that they are PR campaigns being run by an opinionated group of this faith in public life. I don't really understand it, and so I can't really defend it.
Now, to be fair, George Soros is often, pictured imaginatively, at least at first mentioned by many conservatives, with horns and a tail. But to be fair, there are well-funded PR firms that are doing just the same thing on other issues, vis-a-vis journalism.
I assume there are tons of PR firms. I don't know if any of them are quite, I actually think this Faith in Public Life does its work quite well. And I also want to say, I don't see anything wrong with, I don't think there's anything nefarious about an atheist funding religious groups. He's not pretending he's not an atheist. He's just seeing some people who can work towards shared goals together. And yes, there are a lot of PR firms out there. And in fact, I would assume that rather than complain about it, if someone doesn't like it, they should look at how effective some people are and think about whether they want to also improve their relations with the media and work on helping reporters frame a story or get sources or look at things from a different angle. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a PR firm helping a reporter out like that.
Okay, so to kind of set the record straight then, what kind of reporting would need to be done to say, look, here are these firms and here are the stories that they're focusing on, like the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, or Four Nuns on a Bus. Here are the stories that they're focusing on. This is how this works, and this is the message that's being told. What kind of reporting needs to be done here?
I think that people might be interested in knowing the role that PR firms play in shaping the news that ends up on their TV screens or in their papers. And actually, the whole way I learned about this group was from a CNN story that laid it out bare. Like, a reporter at CNN who's a religion reporter said, there's this group, Faith in Public Life, and they are doing this campaign. So it is possible to be totally transparent about where you're getting your information and, just identifying the group and its biases and whatnot. Seems like it didn't hurt the CNN story at all to just be very transparent about the role that that group was playing. And I think that it might be good for reporters to just remember to connect the dots more when they're covering these groups and think about, are these four people on a bus really representative of something huge that deserves major coverage, or is this just a PR campaign? Are those 5,000 people in the cathedral, not worthy of attention just because they don't have a slick PR campaign that is, you know, that's associated with them. It's good for reporters to kind of remember that the PR business and the PR campaign should not dictate the coverage, even if you're using these campaigns to help you with your coverage.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C. and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.